You are live.
Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another pulse-pounding episode of the Banff Podcast again. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and Banff Podcast's original and ongoing mission is to be focused on superhero comics and superhero RPGs. And today we've got some guys from the really interesting Worlds in Peril RPG. You might have heard about it. They had a big Kickstarter not too long ago. It's a superhero RPG powered by the Apocalypse World Engine. And let me introduce these guys first. We have Kyle Simons, who's the author of Worlds in Peril. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us because I understand you're way across the ocean in Korea right now.
Yeah, it's a little bit early for me, but not too bad.
Are you in the military, sir?
No, I'm studying here.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Co-designer of Worlds in Peril, we have Mr. Adam Bosarge.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here. And last but not least, we have Jason Falk, who is another co-designer of Worlds in Peril. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Cool. All right, well, hey, I'm going to hand the imaginary mic over to Walt and Aid Smith. Well, hang on, Walt, looks like we've lost Aid.
No, he's here. He just had his mic.
Hello.
Hey. Oh, sorry. You were in stealth mode. I was unaware you were.
Ah-ha-ha.
So that's it. For regular listeners of the podcast, that's Aid Smith and Walt Rebilliard, who are frequent co-hosts. So I'm going to pass the mic off to those guys because they're big Worlds in Peril fans. My big question is, who wants to go first?
Since you have the bright and shiny accent and everybody loves you more than me, did you want to go first, Abe?
I can do. That's fine if you want to. That's fine. I don't mind. I actually know not a lot about Worlds in Peril, so I would definitely like to know what the actual setting is and why you decided on the Apocalypse engine rather than something that other people seem to have latched onto.
Okay. Well, the default, I guess, setting that you could say for the game is that it's just in an urban setting. We kind of assume something like New York because a lot of comics do that. And it's a four-color super setting. The reason why we went with the Apocalypse World engine is because that it's a lot more collaborative in play. It does a really good job of mediating conversation between players. So it's got a good flow to it, and it's collaborative not only just in how you play, but in coming up with the setting as well. So the default setting is kind of just an assumption of urban setting, and then you kind of build the setting as you go, because there are certain moves in the Apocalypse World engine, which is certain things you say during the conversation at the table will trigger moves, and that's when you roll the dice, and those moves have the potential to shape the world and what goes on in it.
Building the setting as you go, so to speak.
Yeah. So Apocalypse World is more of a narrative game, sort of like Fiasco, right?
Definitely, yeah, in that vein. It's probably... I don't know. I haven't played too much Fiasco, so I would say that it's a little bit more... tighter in that it controls the conversation and there's more going on in terms of rolling the dice. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I haven't played too much Fiasco, so I don't want to look too stupid talking about it.
No, it's played it once in the podcast a couple of years ago. It's pretty scripted depending on your playset.
Okay.
In our case, it was very specific to us being a local news team who were highly dysfunctional.
oh, nice.
Kind of set the relationships in the first half of the game, and then there's a tilt, sort of like, you know, midway through a Coen Brothers movie when everything goes bad.
Right, when stuff goes bad, yeah.
Yeah, so as far as, like, powers and stuff, do you really, like most RPGs dealing with superheroes, if you get a huge part of the book where they just deal with, you know, defining powers and their effects, you guys are really a narrative game. Do you really need to do that, or is it sort of a hybrid, or how'd you handle that?
That's where it's a good bit different. There's a lot of superheroes games out there, and a lot of them do that really well with how they had the clearly defined powers. With this, all of your moves a lot of times won't have to do with your powers. In Apocalypse World, there are things called playbooks, which sort of define who your character is. And in this, we chose to break it into two. So you have your origin and your drive playbooks. So your origin may be something like Death of the Family, Or, for instance, in the we're doing a little recording a playtest of it, and I'm using the My Legacy one, which is a legacy hero like the Phantom or something like that. So in that case, the moves are more about influencing the story and the fiction, not necessarily tied to the powers. Your powers aren't tied to the moves, and what you can do is not necessarily influenced by those moves, for if you're familiar with how the Apocalypse World moves work. I don't know if I explained that well enough.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, with the thing that we didn't want to do is just have you choose from a big list of powers, because we felt like that really, I mean, that's something I always found limiting in superhero games, is like, I don't want to just pick a list of powers. I want to create my own powers. How does that work together? And how does the Hulk and Hawkeye, how does that fit into, you know, if you have the Hulk and the Hawkeye, they can walk together in a comic book. That's awesome. But when you play a role-playing game, Hulk kills everybody. Hawkeye stands around and, you know, drinks a beer or whatever. Like, we wanted to do something where everybody's character mattered. And so we decided that powers was going to be completely fictional. As far as how your powers affect the game. Like, for example, in the game we're playing now, Adam's playing a character who his powers, he can basically turn invisible, and then I'm playing a character whose powers are basically Superman, and we did that on purpose so that we can show that everybody has a chance to shine in this game. You can play what you want, everybody can fit together, just like a real superhero world where, like, it doesn't make sense that Hawkeye's an Avenger if you put them on a list, but I mean, if you read the comic book, Hawkeye's my favorite Avenger, like, because of, you know, because he can do other things. So I think that that's kind of one of the things we were going for.
Now, how did you guys adjust the Apocalypse World engine in pertaining to the playbooks? You know, did you make any? Because I noticed, like, some of your moves are a little bit different as opposed to something like Dungeon World. Can you describe the process of how you went through and adjusted the game to fit, you know, capes, cowls, and masks?
Sure, yeah. Well, when we started writing the game, we actually took it, my original concept was Dungeon World. I started with Dungeon World because that was my first Powered by the Apocalypse game. So we kind of started from that assumption. And then the idea I had was I wanted to actually port Marvel Heroic Role-Playing their sheets. I wanted to bring it in and, like, see if I could make some, like, quick convert sheets so you could, like, use one of their sheets to play in that engine, because, you know, Marvel Heroic does it so well and their sheets are so pretty. But it just kind of snowballed from there. And
I'd like to pause for a moment and pour out a 40 for Marvel Heroic Role-Playing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I love that game.
Pretty amazing. So.
I love that game. Like, it's my West Virginia sister. I love that game a lot.
Yeah.
I was just about to say exactly the same thing. We've mourned the loss of that game a few times in the past podcast.
So. It's a beautiful, beautiful game. Yeah.
It's an ongoing mourn for me. It's periodic.
Yeah, but did you hear that? I guess MWP is going to be putting out a plainclothes version.
No.
But
that's awesome.
Ah, very cool.
They've been supposed to do that for kind of a while now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
it'll be here one day, like the Star Wars sequels or the Firefly revival. It'll happen. I didn't mean to cut you off, Kyle. Please continue.
No problem. So yeah, we started with some basic assumptions. The moves, I think they're still pretty related to Dungeon World. Like, if you take a look at them, there's a lot of similarities, I think. But we, some of our main moves for interacting with the fiction are different, like the takedown move is set up to be kind of an all-purpose move so that no matter what stat you use, you can have the same effect in the fiction. Like Jason was talking about with Hulk and Hawkeye, like mechanically the characters are going to look different, like in terms of numbers and the probability of success and such. So the way that powers factor in is that when you come up with your powers, you just come up with something that's simple to do, difficult, borderline, possible, and impossible. And that's kind of like your, just to define your boundaries. And then how you affect the fiction when you roll is still similar in Dungeon World, like how you use stats like strength and dexterity or whatever. Now we've changed it so it's, you know, smash and maneuver, and but it's still pretty intuitive. So when you're rolling, the Hulk and Hawkeye, no matter what they do, they're going to have the same probability of success, but their powers allow them to interact with the fiction in a more specific way. So, like, Hulk will be able to smash things in a more broad way because, you know, he's got the power, and he could, like, if he said that I wanted to, you know, punch out a column of a building and so it collapses in on someone, we can say that, okay, that's no problem because that's, you know, defined by your powers. Whereas if Hawkeye said I wanted to, you know, shoot a guy from two blocks away and hit him like dead center or something, we can say, okay, that's cool, no problem. Just roll your maneuver or whatever you're doing, as long as it's defined by your powers. So your powers are just ways to interact with fiction and use the moves. So it's basically the answer to can you do that? And then you're despite everyone having the a similar mechanics of success in the fiction with the stats.
So we are emulating the fiction, not the physics.
Right, totally. The physics go out the window pretty quick.
Yeah, it's comic books. I stole that from somebody else. I want to say Fred Hicks, but cool. Sounds like a lot of fun. So you guys, as you say, you're recording an actual play?
Yeah, we have been for about a month now, I think.
Yeah.
And we haven't put it up for people to listen to yet, but we're planning on doing that pretty soon here once we have a few episodes that people can binge on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, send me the link if you would when that goes live. I'll boost the signal on it. I'm curious to check it out for myself.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
It's all good, man. So, hey, Kickstarter. Sometimes it is a great, wonderful, magical experience, and sometimes it's sort of a nerve-wracking... How was it for you guys, I guess is what I'm asking.
You guys want to answer first? It was your first Kickstarter.
Yeah, this was my first Kickstarter. Kyle had already done one already for... we used to actually all live and create together. Well, not in the same place, but that's where we met. So this was my first Kickstarter. I had some kind of peripheral stuff to do with Kyle's first, one for his Magician's RPG, but... yeah, I mean, it was, I would say, stressful, because I was the one who answered, you know, all 500 messages there and so on and so forth. But it was exciting, and it's really cool to kind of put yourself out there. And then, I mean, this is people pretty much giving you money, saying, hey, we believe in you and in your product and what you're doing. So that's a really cool thing. But like you say, it can be kind of a burden too, because for me, I definitely want to produce and I want people to get this and be very happy with it. And I don't want it, I'm not saying it will, but I don't want it to be one of those Kickstarters that disappears, because I have experience in funding such things. So, but, you know, that's why we actually pretty much had the game, I would say, 95% done completely, rules-wise and play-tested, before we even put up the Kickstarter. We also had some artwork done by Jonathan, you know, that we footed for ourselves, so that we could, you know, show people that we were serious about it, because when, like you mentioned, Fred Hicks, somebody like that, to put something up, obviously they have, you know, an amazing track record, right? It's definitely understandable, you know, people being hesitant, especially with so many wayward Kickstarters these days. So I guess the sort of meandering answer to your question, it was exciting, and it was, I guess, humbling and really cool to have people basically saying, hey, we, you know, believe in what you're doing, and, you know, here you go. I mean, because that's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah, and the thing with the Kickstarter, the one thing, like, I don't know, it was really nice to watch the funds grow and grow, but I don't know, like, every time I talk to somebody about it, they're like, oh, you got such, you know, $20,000 of Kickstarter money, like, that's got to be a nice payout. I was like, no, like, you know, like, these guys, like, especially Adam and Kyle, you know, they're... and me too, but I mean, these guys, they're in love with the product, and like everything that we got, we reinvested. Like, it's so, you know, it's something you don't understand about, I guess, whenever you're looking at somebody else run a Kickstarter. Like, that's not money in our pocket. That's money that we're going to put into this game. And, you know, that's why our art is, I mean, I love our art. I love our artist. And, you know, that's why this part's going to be beautiful. I mean, I really think it's going to be beautiful. Like, even if you don't want to play it, it's going to look nice sitting on your shelf. Like, we're super stoked about it. But, yeah, that was my experience with Kickstarter. It's just like, wow, like, they like us. They really like us kind of deal. Like, I was floored by it. And I think that Kyle was always the optimist. And then, you know, me and Adam were a little bit, we hadn't done it before. So I think we're a little taken back. The way it started, it was just amazing. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's always a fun experience, I think, doing a Kickstarter. It's got that mix of anticipation, and it's really gratifying when you get funded in, like, the first day kind of thing, and then you can watch things skyrocket. But there's always that, you're always a little bit shaky, and I had a lot less stress this time because Adam was fielding the Kickstarter, so, you know, like, questions and people, you know, constantly asking for stretch goals and that kind of thing, and we could probably do another whole podcast on how to make Kickstarter funds disappear as well, but that's another thing.
I'm ready to do a podcast all about the perils of a successful Kickstarter. And
oh yeah,
you would be surprised how many folks don't want to talk to me about that. I sent out several emails, and I got one guy, Sean Patrick Fannin, who's a great guy.
I talked to him.
He's a good fella. He wants to talk about Shaintar, but. Lots of folks have been like, oh, no, I don't want to talk about it. And I'm like, everyone knows it's hard to do a Kickstarter. There's no shame in talking about it. But,
oh, totally.
It is. And I think a lot of it is, I don't know, necessarily maybe people being embarrassed or not wanting people to lose faith in their product if they're still working on it, that kind of thing, I guess. I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but...
We're creatives. We're not... businessmen, if that makes sense. So,
there's a lot you learn along the way, I guess.
Yeah, like we want to make a great product, and we have good ideas about this role playing game. But like, none of us have a business degree or anything like that. So there's that aspect of like we're getting a bootstrapped, picked up our bootstraps in a quick lesson in business running that end of it, but uh-huh. It was still overall was an excellent experience.
That's cool. And I guess we should mention two things before I forget. Number one, you guys had a really successful Kickstarter. Your goal was $6,000 and you raised, I think as someone pointed out, upwards of 20.
Yeah, just yeah. Over.
We keep mentioning a guy named Jonathan. We should probably come out and say explicitly for this podcast, but we didn't, but that is, let's see, Jonathan Rector.
Yeah,
our artist.
Yeah, the main artist on this, who also, I understand, does a series of YouTube videos.
Yeah, he has a show on YouTube that he puts out pretty regularly, actually. He's been doing it for a few years at least, because that's where I found him. I actually started following him back on YouTube like a long time ago, before I even had the inkling of making a role-playing game, a superhero one. But he does a lot of how-to videos if people are interested in how to do pencils and inks, digital stuff, how to do traditional stuff. He talks about his process, about breaking into the industry, about his experience with it. Talks about workflow. Like, he's got lots and lots of great, great stuff on his YouTube. And I found his stuff just because I was really interested in watching him draw and his techniques and stuff. And then when we did start writing up the game and designing and playtesting it, I knew right away that I wanted to have him on it. And yeah, thankfully he was excited to do it as well. So yeah, we got him to do the whole book exclusively, and
he dumped a lot of work on his lap.
Yeah, like it's been months and months for him. Like he does his stuff in his spare time. Like he's got a full time job, and he wakes up at like 5 a.m. or something to do work on our game. So it's kind of like this process of feeling really bad until the art comes in, and then feeling really bad again. We basically chained him to a desk for like a few months at least.
So. Now, you guys have delivered kind of a draft copy to your backers, but the game itself hasn't come out within the finished product. Is that correct, or do I have that wrong?
That's right. Yeah, we've got The playtest has been out since the Kickstarter, and then the final draft dropped a few months ago.
Yeah.
And right now we're just waiting for the art, and it just needs to be loaded in, basically.
Yeah. So the mechanics, all that, the whole PDF, the layout, all that's completely done, because we've got Daniel Salz to do the layout.
If people are interested, there's a draft to download in the Worlds in Peril community, Google Plus community. There's like a free draft. People can come and check it out if they want to play it even.
Yeah. Okay. And then that's the final version of the game. So we're basically just waiting on, because most of our stretch goals focused on art, more art for the book. So we're basically waiting for those, you know, last bits of art to trickle in so we can, you know, have Daniel plug them into the layout so we can get the finished PDF out and the printing done.
And that's the last member of the team as well, Daniel Solis. He's on layout.
Forgot to mention him. So folks, go to your updates page on your Kickstarter for Worlds in Peril. They can see some examples of Jonathan's art.
Yep.
Yes.
He's scrolling past my favorite one now. I'm sorry. I just saw him scrolling through.
Someone talk. Go ahead. Oh, shut up.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the last video I saw Jonathan drawing was Vikings coming through a portal. Which was pretty cool. So that's, I would say, I've been a fan of the guy for a good few years, watching his YouTube videos as well. So it was him that brought me to the attention of you guys. And every time he's like putting this extra superhero artwork, it's always something that's completely different from the last one. It seemed really cool. So
yeah, it was a ton of fun to write up the art specs for the game, especially because there's so much of it. Like it's going to be pretty lush. And then the thing that I enjoyed the most and that I was really happy was that we could do that intro comic to the game. So the entire game and the mechanics are explained in a 12-page comic in the front of it.
Very cool.
Yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And hey, I should mention this now, if not my partners might remind me of it later. We're actually doing our own Kickstarter right now for a game called Supervillains.
Villains one, right? Yeah.
Oh, you guys know about this one.
Yes, I was looking. Oh, yes. I've been looking at it.
Supervillains
Handbook. Very nice.
Right now, Icons Supers, which is Walt's game, and we just added Fate Core as a stretch goal. I think we're within $500 of that, and that just happened this morning. Walt made that announcement. So.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks. Written by Jason Chandro, who is a doctor of comics as American literature, and. Art by a bunch of folks, and Aid's doing our layout. So Supervillain Handbook on Kickstarter, check it out, because we're good enough and nice enough. People like this guy's darn it. And that's a 20-year-old Saturday Night Live callback that probably no one got, so someone's sighing deeply. I don't blame you. Sorry about that, sir. Anyway, back to focus on Worlds in Peril. Walt, you've been awfully quiet. Terry, care to jump in?
Oh yeah. Like has been going on, everybody's been really good about asking and answering questions. My question would be for how many comics did you guys have to read? You have two great sections in the book that I really fell in love with. Was your Choose the Origin section, and then the Choose the Drive section. I mean, even if you're not an Apocalypse World fan, just for those two sections alone, the book is brilliant. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Oh yeah.
Sure. You want to talk about it, Jason? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. Well, as far as like comic books, how many we've read? Like, have to is the wrong word. Like I'm obsessive comic book. I don't know. I'm sure that you guys. I saw when your video was on. I saw the background, so I'm sure that you're much like me. I'd read. I don't know. Probably 50, 60, 100 comic books a month. Like, I love comic books. Like, I read as much as I can.
Jason, then, what's your favorite right now?
Oh, man. I'm a fanboy. I'm an Avengers fanboy, so I'm really liking Hickman's run. Like, I'm really ready for him to wrap it up, like, to see where it's going. The last New Avengers with Thor and Hyperion fighting the Beyonders. I hope I'd ruin anything. Oh, man, that's so... That blew my mind. I like Girl Thor. Everybody's
Girl Thor.
Girl Thor. Like, Girl Thor.
Yeah, Jason Aaron's run on Thor has been awesome too. So that's where I'm at. And everybody's like, oh, I'm the comic book dude, but like Kyle reads as much as I do. Like no doubt Adam as well. Like we lived it, and you know, that was something that we really, the two sessions that you're talking about, that Origins and Drive, like whenever that idea, like when we hit on that idea, like we all knew like this is cool, and like we were able to, like there's so many. I think with that, that was, and this is something Kyle, like way back, he said, like, I don't want to focus on what makes them, the powers that make them a hero. I want to focus on what really makes them a hero. Like, let's focus on the, you know, the origin. Like, why is Spider-Man's not a hero because he has spider powers. Spider-Man's a hero because he's, you know, with great power becomes great responsibility. His uncle died, and he's trying to, you know, live up to that. That's why he's a hero, and that's what we want you to play. Like, we want you to play a Marvel comic, and not in the fact that, you know, I played a lot of games where you pick a list and you fly around and punch each other, but we wanted to, like, we want you to feel like you're playing a comic, like you're writing a comic together with your friends. So that's why those sessions are, you know, we spend a lot of time in that, and I'll be honest, get towards the end of the book and start reading the EIC stuff. Ether in Chief is what we call the game master, or the master of ceremonies, I believe they call it in Apocalypse World. But read that stuff, and like you'll see that Kyle's a genius writer. Like, I'm not kidding. Like that stuff is. We gave him some, you know, some notes, but he wrote all that. And that stuff, like when he starts talking about how to make a villain and things like that, there's a lot of stuff in there. It's just, I was impressed, you know, by it when I reread it just recently. But anyway, I'll let Kyle talk a little bit about that if he wants.
Sure, yeah. The origins and drives are probably the most fun to come up with, I think, and coming up with the mechanical bits to kind of like, I don't know, they're kind of like archetypal in its own way, but it's got a lot more bits and pieces you can fit together to make them more interesting, I think. And another thing that I really like about the drives in particular is that they've got like your motivation built in, so what you're doing now, and then there's like the advancement works in the game, how to unlock moves basically, so like new things you can do in the fiction and new drive books. There's requirements for each one, so depending on what you need to do in the fiction, you've got like this kind of goal on your sheet. So, you know, if you want to become a leader, you've got to lead your team in battle kind of thing, or if you want to become a mentor, you've got to, you know, have a mentee that looks up to you. And there's a lot of like fictional requirements rather than mechanical ones. So instead of like getting, you know, accruing XP and then like using that to unlock something or buy something, you have to do actual things in the fiction. And depending on what happens in the game, you unlock new books. So I think it's good for, you know, having a goal in mind, something in the back of your head when you're playing the game, and something you can kind of set up an arc with the EIC, with the GM as well. So, you know, I kind of have this idea for my character, and just by choosing your drive, the EIC can kind of see where you're going and what you want to do with that character.
Yeah, funny enough, we actually started out, let's see, over a year before the Kickstarter when we first started working on it. We actually started out with playbooks very similar to how Apocalypse World does it. You just have your base archetype.
Did we have, like, the blaster?
We had the blaster, the brain.
The outsider.
The outsider. But we were, when we went to kind of play the game and actually write out the moves for them, we found out that we were kind of thinking too mechanically, as far
and like lumping a lot of heroes in with the same archetype, right?
Too many heroes in the same archetype, and they became too samey, and we didn't like that. And really, a lot of the moves got buried in using their and the moves being triggered by a specific power. You had a character whose powers completely didn't fit that. It was really kind of difficult for the moves to be triggered, and they really didn't make a lot of sense. And so we're finding that the game was kind of moving away from the focus we wanted, and that's when we decided to split it into Origins Drives and make the moves more about interacting with the fiction and more kind of collaborative storytelling, I guess, in that way. And I definitely think the game turned out better for it. That and Bonds. Bonds are something that I think are really cool, and I think a really core part of the game, along with the Origins and Drives.
Can you talk a little bit about those and how they drive the narrative by not having the typical, oh, you're just meeting a superhero bar?
Yeah, well, we wanted, I think a lot of times, you know, you come from other games and playing your character can be tough sometimes, and building the relationships, not just with the other players, because that is someone you automatically start a bond with, start the game with a bond with, but with NPCs in your backstory. And we thought about, like, Mary Jane and you know, characters like that, and I know a lot of times when you write characters in your backstory, they tend to just fade into the background. And we wanted that sense of peril, that sense of danger for the people close to you in your life. And that's sort of the way bonds kind of play out, and how you have to balance your hero life and your home life. So if I'm playing a character with a wife, and I'm trying to defeat this, let's say I have like a 2-point bond with her or something like that, it's not important, the number, and I'm trying to succeed in something, you actually burn bonds to succeed at doing something in the fiction. But of course you burn that bond and you've lowered it, so it doesn't immediately have to happen in the action that's going on at the moment, but you somehow damage your relationship with that person because you've, you know, chosen your superhero life over that. So it could be maybe you've got to pick the kids up from soccer practice, or you know, something a bit more, missed her play or what have you. It can really be anything, and that's basically, you know, where the bonds come in. We wanted you to have to make those hard choices that, okay, if I'm going to succeed, then we wanted to be able to build this story that the bonds really meant something when you burned them.
Yeah, we also wanted, like, a little bit more, like, melodrama coming into, because if you read comics like, you know, X-Men and that kind of thing, there's a lot of interplay between the player characters themselves as well, like, if the X-Men were all played by players. So you can also burn bonds with, you know, your fellow players as well, and you can kind of work out how that, you can play out how that goes in fiction as well. So you can burn bonds with your, you know, fellow players as well to succeed in combat, but that means that later on you're going to have to tell us what happens because of that, the fallout for what you did, or the fallout for, like, how you want to... how the personal lives of the character also affect. So instead of just having, like, the upfront battle and, you know, the chaos, and after that we just kind of, like, skip to the next battle kind of thing, we also have it so that in order to, like, recover from you know, your fights and your injuries and stuff, then what you can do is you have to kind of show, like, a vignette or tell the table what goes on after that, like, what does your personal life look like, and then that's when you can resolve any bonds that are left out there as well. So just an extra layer of depth, I guess.
And there's another set of bonds that we have is we did put in the city and the law enforcement, which I think is really cool because, you know, that's always something that's going on, like the X-Men, you know, they save the world, but the heroes in the world that hates and fears them, you know, you could have that aspect. You have the Avengers where they're like toast of the town, and you can go back and forth with that, you know, and you could burn a bond there, you know, and it doesn't always have to be something that happens later in the fiction. Like, you could, you know, you could, Batman could kill the Joker on national television and burn that bond with the law enforcement in the city, or, you know, these kind of things, like, those kind of things. You know, not that Batman's ever going to kill the Joker, but anyway, he's immortal now, right? Isn't that the news? Did I ruin something for somebody?
But anyway, listen to our last podcast.
Yeah. right. But anyway, you know, that
Yeah, you know, just that the world affects them as well. Yeah.
Right, like we wanted the bonds are a major part, and that's been so much fun. Like as we've played it, I've loved the bonds and like being able to burn the bonds and build the bonds back up. Like it's great.
It's a good tool for the GM too, because you can kind of give the players feedback of what's going on in the world. So if you if they like you know take down a vision on national television, but it also shows like how much damage was done to the city and stuff. You'd like lose bonds in the city as well, so it's kind of like a feedback loop there as well.
Now you got the EIC section. I got to tell you, hysterical. One of the things, you know, when to make a move. The EIC makes a move when everybody looks at you to find out what happens. Greatest line, greatest line in the GM section ever. But. What kind of gameplay research did you do in order to, because this is fairly extensive extensive section, what did you do to kind of come up with a lot of the advice that NEIC is going to face, especially with how collaborative this game is?
Right. Well, I think the great thing about the Apocalypse World engine is that it's got a lot front-loaded. So a lot of the moves, like the basic moves for driving the fiction, taking care of the narrative, how to deal with like, you know, upping tension or putting people in a spot, that's kind of the standard for Apocalypse World. Like it's kind of built in. And then from there, you kind of start with your base and you you kind of add stuff just that will be to emphasize the comic book, like the setting part of it. So, you know, about stuff that's unique to our setting, like the bonds and such, and then stuff that's unique to the comic book world, like what kind of factions you'd introduce or what kind of stuff to introduce in the fiction. Because with a comic book world, the great thing is that you kind of have everything you can throw at them, right? Like it's the everything in the kitchen sink. It's basically like riffs. You can kind of, you know, you got like multiple dimensions you can go with. You've got like a negative zone. You got, yeah, that's why that's like in the EIC section, that's why the art is going to be so diverse, because you've got like Vikings charging in. You've got like mermaids going on. You got like
lizards coming from the Hollow Earth.
Yeah, like really nothing's off limits with that. So I guess to answer the question more, yeah. The great thing about Apocalypse World is that it's already been built by, you know, a few geniuses, and then we had also the luxury of having Jonathan Walton on board, and he was our development editor, and he's a huge voice in the Apocalypse World community, and he knows his stuff too. So we also consulted with him, and a lot of the great stuff was work with collaborating with him as well.
Definitely.
So. I guess in terms of inspiration and stuff, it's just comics. But go ahead, Jason.
Oh, I was gonna say I'm sure that Kyle and Adam got a lot of testing, trying to teach me the game. Like whenever we first started, like I was very new to Apocalypse World, and like I've always been more like. I kept bringing up these things. And like, that doesn't work that way. Like they would explain a lot to me. And like once it clicked in my head, it's like this is such a genius system for superheroes, because it allows for you to make whatever you want and play together with someone else who made whatever they want and tell the story together. Honestly, for me, I had to stop at one point and just I made my own little a little side game just to teach myself the rules more, to get more into it, and you know these guys like I remember me and Adam used to work together in Korea, and we would just you know after work go have a drink or whatever, and Adam would just be like no you're not getting it, let me, you know, and Adam you know he really helped me understand how a lot of stuff works, and you know that's something that we that was a lot of the research we all wanted to understand, not just comic books, but also understand this game. And then we did some playtesting, a lot of things like that. But the great thing about it is it's such a great, the game itself, like the engine itself is already such a great build.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have the benefit of the Apocalypse World engine being out for a while too, right? So there's a lot of people, with a lot of experience with the system, a lot of system mastery out there. So when we did finally put out the playtest and everything, and we had it pretty much, I think, like a week after we started the Kickstarter. So as soon as we, you know, dropped it for people to, you know, say, you know, you can start playing, give us your feedback and stuff, the amount of feedback, like we had no idea. Like, there are so many people who are able to play it, conceptualize it, give us feedback, and really good feedback, because it's been out for so long and it's such a beloved system.
Now, what was the art production process like? Did you guys go in and say, so here's the idea, superhero game, go? Or did you have preconceived, this is what this page has to look like, this is how we need the art? Can you talk about that?
It's very specific.
It's a little bit of both, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Because before the Kickstarter, we can't really say, like, you know, this page, we want this and such, because we don't know how much it's going to change. But so we had, like, in the beginning, we wanted to have it so, like, we needed something to show for, you know, to show off Jonathan to have on the Kickstarter. So in that case, it was, like, more general stuff about the characters. And then after that, once we have the final playtest and the final wording and the final layout, then we started going through, like, one by one, and then, like, you know, where art needs to go, what needs to be there.
But the iconic characters had already been sort of fleshed out when we, before we did the Kickstarter, because we did had Jonathan do drawings of them. We're actually characters we were playing in the playtest.
Yeah, concept art as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I think that's something interesting to if you look at the art. Like, whenever we did the original art pieces, like, those were for the, I think, was it six? We had six, the six
playbooks.
The art type playbooks. That was the original. And then you can see, like, between that art and then, like, how the concept, I mean, the concept's completely different now. Like, maybe one day we'll put out some of the old stuff just to let people see. I mean, I have all these character sheets that we designed that are just, like, for something completely different. Like, that is so, I mean, some of the moves are still there, but it's so different from where we started. The whole process is really interesting.
We started, whose idea was it for the, I think her name is the Protector, the girl in the fireman suit.
Oh, the Guardian. I think that was me and Adam, I think, a lot of it.
That was one of our collective ones. I think those guys, that's one of my favorite characters, definitely. But those guys, that was such a cool concept. Anyway, I'll let you guys talk about her since you made her up.
With I think the most fun, like, that was a lot of fun, I think, coming up with each of those characters. Like, that was before, back when we thought we were going to do the archetypes. So we actually had it, like, all planned out for each one. Like, we had backstories for them, like, what they were going to look like, what their powers were, and that was a lot of fun, too. So, we gave really detailed art specs to Jonathan, and he came up with some mind-blowing awesome stuff.
I like the alien, the outsider. He's my favorite. That's my favorite art. Art. Oh, that's so good.
I like him.
Yeah. I don't think I can choose.
It's hard. The robot, the guy in the sort of Iron Man suit was one of my characters.
The Sentinel,
game. Sentinel, yeah.
He's been playing that character since I've known him, so it's like his baby.
Yeah, that first game we ran was, like, I think, which character were you playing, Jason?
Oh, I was running.
You were playing the girl with the, who transforms into the beast.
Yeah, and we were doing the... That was the B time, B team, rather, right?
So, yeah, like, we were the B team here.
The concept was, like, the Avengers got taken out, so we were, like, the guy, the B list that got taken.
Like, the West Coast Avengers got called in.
Yeah, and we're, like,
we drove around in my Honda Odyssey.
I had to drop the kids off at school and stuff.
Which somebody commented, we have the, if you see the pictures, the heroes coming out of the garage. That's, somebody commented about it, like, you really don't see, you know, too many super teams coming out of somebody's garage, and while that comes from that, you know, first play test when it was me and Kyle's characters, you know, the B team. We didn't have any money, so basically having to drop the kids off at soccer practice and then go save the world.
Now, what's next for Worlds in Peril? I mean, you know, you got the core book coming out fairly soon, but after that, do we have any expansions or new playbooks or anything like that coming out?
Sounds like something Jason might want to talk about.
Oh yeah, so I have a set. You know, you asked about the core setting. There's not really a core setting. We kind of wanted to do it where, you know, you could play any type of superhero game that you wanted. But I do have a core setting that it's a world that, I mean, it's a comic book world that I've built. I've played in. I've ran games in before. Long, long before, back in, I mean, I guess 2004, 2005, I started this. But it's called, right now it's called New Avalon, and it's a, you know, it's going to be a setting. What I'm looking for, what we're thinking about is it's going to be more like a, we had this concept that would come up really late. It was after the Kickstarter already started, so we said we'd wait on it, but like a map, like we would literally put a map in there and there'd be different locations. So it's going to be a city, the locations, we're going to have locations built up. It's going to have different, like for example, their Wonder World is one, is abandoned amusement park, and there's different, you know,
there's like moves built into them.
There's moves built into the place itself, and then there's the character, you know, Abe Skullington is his name, and he is the leader of the group, and so it's going to do kind of a, you know, that's kind of what I'm working on. And it, as far
also
as expanding
books,
the
right?
rules,
yeah, the team.
Yeah, we're going to do the team books, which is something that we didn't get in time in there. That's one thing we're going to work on locations, and then, you know, it's just going to be a list. And then another thing, we're just going to give you a lot of characters to pull from, so that you know, they can. And the thing about Apocalypse World in Peril is that we don't want it to be too specific, like, because part of the fun is building the world together. So, you know, we'll give you characters there, but then you can go and take what you want from those characters. So that's kind of what we're coming out next with. But the rule changes are probably going to be more about location and kind of team books, where the teams are going to they'll have their own moves that you can use based on how strong your team bond is. So give you like a kind of new, and they'll have different origins, kind of like, trying to think of Brought Together by Fate would be one.
Or the family.
Family, united against a common enemy. And then those will also, just like our origins and drives, those will grow because, you know, if you look at, say, the Avengers movies, you know, the first movie is really brought together by a common enemy. They're united to fight this common enemy. And then, the next one, they're more of a team. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. But, you know, so teams grow. And that was something that with the new book and the old book, with the Worlds of Peril, with what I want to go, where we want to go and where we're doing in the old book is that, you know, we wanted you to be able to grow your character because, you know, comics are about it's a character that people read for years and years and years and years. And we wanted you to be able to play a game and change the character, but keep playing that same character. I mean, that's something we wanted to do. But, yeah, that's what I'm looking at next. And then that'll be something that, like, I'll take the helm, I'll write it. And then, of course, I don't think I could do it without Kyle and Adam's help. So, you know, that's the next thing for Worlds of Peril, but yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting to hear everybody else talk about their teams coming together, because every time at my gaming table, it's always brought together by tacos or chasing girl in short skirt. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think that's where the team books concept came from, like just to give, you know, kind of, if it's something that people can choose from the get-go, then you kind of have like a preloaded idea in mind, and even more easy for the guy running it, right?
Build up an HQ, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That was something. You know, that's something we've been tossing around. Is kind of they can use their bond points to build up their HQ. I mean, there's a lot of cool things we're thinking about.
Yeah, it's definitely still in the early stages, but yeah. Lots of ideas.
Now, if people want to stalk you guys on the internet, where's a good place for them to find you?
I think the best place is probably the Google Plus community for Worlds in Peril itself, if the interest is Worlds in Peril, but all of us are on Google Plus, I think, as well.
Yep.
Like, I'm technically on Twitter, but it's more of like I read my feed every month kind of thing. I should probably be more active on it. So, Google Plus is definitely my hangout. I don't know about you guys.
I'm hurting for friends, so you can come visit anytime you'd like. No, I'm joking. But, I don't know. I think that, yeah, I agree with the hangout for Worlds of Peril is a good place. And then, I don't know, I'm looking to do my own kind of comic book podcast eventually. Something I'm sort of a side project that I'm working on, kind of more about my opinions and how I feel about the comics. Because, like I said, I do read a lot. And then, but I don't have I'm the same way. I guess I should be more active on Twitter. I don't know the last time I've posted anything myself. So, you can always find me on Google Plus.
How about you, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, Google Plus is pretty much my go-to place. The Google Plus groups and several of them, but probably if it's specific to Worlds in Peril, definitely the Google Plus group that we created for that.
Yeah, it's pretty active.
Other than that,
it's a fun place.
I can see no reason anyone would want to stalk me. I like to stay in the background.
please don't stalk me.
If you guys need an angry host for Jason's upcoming podcast, Aid has a very, very detailed opinions about comics.
Oh, God, yes. I have been to rant several times, yes.
Oh, man, we'll have to just talk anytime. I'd love to. Like, I literally, my day job, I spend talking on the phone all day. So when I get out, I have to call one of my friends just to kind of blow off some. Yeah. Well, I have to talk to someone. I have to, like, realize that the world is not all full of complete idiots. Like, I have to talk to someone. I'm like, oh, wait, you're not a moron. I thought that the world, after they talkies, but, you know, and then that's all I do is rant about comic books, and then we're finally like, you know, we should just record this and see if anybody wants to listen to it, because I have some fun opinions. We'd have to, anytime you guys want to talk, I would love to, but, yeah.
Oh, so we could call it the Two Angry Guys Comics Podcast.
Yeah, let each other about comics.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
You should just make it so you have to.
You're not a DC, are you? I mean, because I don't know.
What's that?
Abe, are you a DC or a Marvel?
More DC than Marvel, but I read pretty much anything as long as it's good. That's all that matters.
Okay. Oh no, we would definitely fit together because I hate DC. My question about Batman has always been, like, he's the world's greatest detective, but he can't solve a murder that he witnessed. So,
that's a good point.
No, I'm just kidding. No, that's the thing. My best friend that I call, he's a big DC, so we always, and you know, yeah, we both take each other.
Good natured ribbing.
Yeah, good natured ribbing. But anyway.
Is there anything that you guys want to cover before we call this a night?
I don't think so. Well, like we're working on the final game and the art's coming soon, so hopefully we're hoping to get the game out pretty quick here. And then once it's out, I'm sure we'll spam the universe with links, so should be easy to find.
Would you guys be interested in coming back and possibly running some of our hosts through an actual play?
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
Oh, that'd be fun, yeah.
Totally.
That would be very cool, yeah.
I'm
more than happy.
And honestly, I know that it's, you know, the people have been waiting a while for the actual book to come out, but when you see this art, like, when you, like, see this book, you're going to, it's worth it. I mean, I promise it's worth it. Like, I'm floored that it's something that, that's being put out by three dudes that met in Korea. Like, it's not it's beautiful. Like, I hate to brag, but, like,
watch out, Watsy.
Yeah.
Because we have some other stuff on the banner, too.
Other stuff such as? Or can you not talk about it yet?
Well, you guys,
Super secret, guys.
Yeah.
No, we've got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Jason's mostly going with his setting that he's been talking about the new Avalon stuff for Worlds in Peril. Adam's working on a super secret hex crawl, and I have so many things I'm working on all the time that I'm not really sure. But the best, the thing that looks the most promising right now is a cyberpunk game that hacks Gumshoe and kind of mixes it with Apocalypse World.
Cool. Oh, right on.
Yeah. Kyle's always got, every time I talk to him, he's got a new project. It always makes my projects look really bad, but then he's like, I'm working on something else. I'm like, no, but that one project was awesome. Like, he has so many cool projects, so yeah, I expect great things. And you guys should too.
Well, we're pretty much coming up on the witching hour, so I just wanted to say thank you very much, guys, for coming on, and we're serious about that actual play invitation. So if you guys want to come on here and you know, watch us
act badly,
let's set that up.
I love
sounds good. Play thanks for having us on.
So, oh yeah, we really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it. Anytime you guys want to play, talk comics, anything, just let me know. I'm always here.
Cool.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, we'll looking forward to the book big time. Yeah.
All right.
We need.
We definitely appreciate you getting the word out there and inviting us too. That's really cool. We do appreciate.
Oh, absolutely.
That.
Yeah, because you know, like I said, I was a backer of the Kickstarter.
Yep.
The art has been gorgeous. Both Aid and I are fans of Jonathan's artwork. You have a really fun manuscript coming out, and you can see where Daniel set up where the art's going to be plugged in.
So yeah.
It's just kind of been like a drinking game to, you know, guess which art pieces that are being debuted go to which spot. Jason, Kyle, Adam, I really appreciate you guys coming on. We're definitely going to set something up for a return appearance. I just want to also thank Mike, who had to duck out early, and then, as always, Aid Smith. If you don't know his name by now, troll the Green Ronin boards, look him up on some of the fantastic work he's doing. I'm Walt, and with that, we are out.